Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
You are now tuned into anything potable, the most honorable, the most audible. Hold the applause, like Paul Pierce when he was fresh out the hospital, like Antoine when he shimmied after shots went through.
Welcome to
Anything is Potable,
the Boston Celtics podcast here on the Athletic Podcast Network. I'm your host, Sam Jam Packard, professional sports fan, and I am joined, as always, by the kid, the god, the legend himself, Celtics beat reporter from The Athletic, Jay King, ladies and gentlemen. And we are coming to you live on a Wednesday, couple days after the Celtics successfully swept the Brooklyn Nets. Scott Foster didn't want it to happen. He did foul out Jason Tatum, but the Celtics managed to get the win, pull out the win, thanks to some timely plays by Jaylen Brown, Al Horford, and Marcus Smart. And next up will likely be the Milwaukee Bucks, fully expecting them to beat the Chicago Bulls without Zach LaVine tonight. And so, Jay, you were in Brooklyn. What was your impression of the win to start? And I guess we'll just start there before getting fully ahead to the Bucks series. What was your impression of the C's win in Game 4?
I think just the whole series, they just had the answers. And when they needed to in that game, they kept Brooklyn at bay. It wasn't like they ever really, really pulled away, but they didn't trail once. Every time Brooklyn came back, they responded. At the end, Jason Tatum foul was out. Things were going to shit. And they made just enough plays down the stretch. Marcus Smart definitely took a layup he should not have taken. Jaylen Brown definitely threw a pass he should not have thrown. But the Celtics, like, they were the better team. After game one, which could have been anybody's, they played like it. Jason Tatum was just awesome throughout that whole series. He outplayed Kevin Durant, which is almost impossible. The Celtics' defense against Durant was incredible, even though he had a pretty big game points-wise during game four. It wasn't like he was super efficient while doing it. And so they just took away what they wanted to take away. They got what they wanted to get. And I just thought it was a really mature four-game sweep for the Celtics against a team that, even though the Nets aren't a great team and obviously they have holes, to do what they did to Durant and Irving during that series is really, really impressive.
Yeah, I mean, game four was kind of the game that I expected, like, most of the series to be like, where it was Kevin Durant, he scored nearly 40 points, but the Celtics still managed to get a victory just because the Nets didn't really have the lineup to close. I think the most impressive thing is we've talked about this Celtics team. A lot of their struggles have obviously been down the stretch, and they won, although some of the games were a little closer because of kind of BS threes at the end. They won four games that were within, I think, 7 points. And we've talked about the team struggling, especially to execute when Jason Tatum's on the bench. And so for those two kind of events to occur in down the stretch of game four, where Tatum fouls out on what was just, it was, I would say, a horse shit call, I think, if I was going to classify
how
it.
How mad were you when that happened?
I kind of chuckled because it was like, that's some Marcus Smart style BS that Goran just pulled. And I was like, well, yeah, you know, like, if you're a fan of Marcus Smart, you just kind of have to understand that kind of stuff happens. I was a little
just
bit
tip your
less.
Cap.
You just got to tip. I mean, that's Goran being Goran. Like, you had to. He pulled him down. It was absolutely bullshit, but you kind of just, like, felt like it was coming. The next 6 minutes of basketball, I was the most nervous I've been watching a Celtics game, probably since the bubble, I would say. Like, really the fandom came back, but it was just impressive the Celtics were able to kind of keep it together and find a way to win. They also kind of lucked out with one Al Horford being able to follow up that layup. KD missing his second free throw, but I thought Jalen was just phenomenal down the stretch and then I'm looking at my notes and it has Jalen turns the ball over. So he wasn't necessarily phenomenal down the stretch, but I thought he did made enough plays to win, which is not something you can necessarily say the Celtics have done for the longest time. So I thought it was impressive for them to get a win when, you know, Tatum fouls out. I think everyone would have just accepted, like, oh, the Nets got their one. Like, the Celtics could have folded in that moment, and they decided, like, they didn't, even without their best player.
Yeah, I thought the series kind of proved, or provided evidence, at least, that the Celtics are what they were over the last 3 months of the regular season. You know, they're not the whatever BS happened early on. They are a defensive juggernaut that can take Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving both out of a series. They took them both out of the series. And that's what's most impressive to me is, like, do it to one guy. Sure. Like, how do you take away both? And so they made things as difficult on Durant as anyone has maybe ever in a playoff series. He had the third worst playoff series field goal percentage that he'd ever had. He had averaged more turnovers per game than he ever had in a series before. Like, they just really, really made the one guy who has looked above all types of defenses over the last 6-7 years, they disrupted that guy. And then I think on top of that, the offensive execution was just really impressive too. And the Nets have holes. They're small. But the Celtics were able to take advantage of it. Tatum, I thought the stretch he had in game four, I think it was the second quarter, when the Nets started scoring, they were trying to come back. And Tatum, three times, uses a mismatch, which the Celtics, you know, executed well to get to that point in the first place, get the ball to Tatum's hands. He has a mismatch. He doesn't use it to go look for his own shot. He uses it to get Grant Williams the ball. And Grant Williams, an open three-point shot. And to me, that just showed the evolution of the Celtics offense to where when they run that stuff, they trust, Tatum trusts that he can get the ball if he gets a mismatch. And then the other guys trust that Tatum will get them the ball once he has the mismatch. And that's a level the Celtics were not at for about a year and a half. And that's just the level that they've gotten to over the last 3 months. And to prove that in a playoff series against Durant, against Irving, and to dominate the key moments of that series the way that they did, they held the Nets to 4-for-13 shooting over 10 clutch minutes and won those 10 minutes 25-10. So whenever it was close, whenever it was a key moment in the game, the Celtics won that moment. And I think that speaks as much to their evolution as anything else. They were able to trust the game plan, trust in each other, and finish out the Nets time after time after time in games that weren't blowouts. I think when we were heading into the series, we were like, what happens if they're in close games, you know? And they dominated the Nets in every close moment of that series. So I was really impressed by that.
I think another huge thing about this series that is a good sign for the Celtics moving forward is it wasn't just the stars. I think Tatum obviously was the best player in the series. Jaylen Brown, I think, had pretty big fourth quarters and especially did a great job attacking in transition. But the bench players, especially, I mean, Peyton Pritchard had a game. Grant Williams had a phenomenal game four, knocking down four threes. And I think his shooting is going to be extremely important. But I even thought Derek White had some good moments. Like, he still was 0-for-4 from three, which I'm sure we will talk about because shooting is going to be very important against the Bucks, but I thought he just did a good job of attacking off the catch and getting into the paint, and he had a nice little run of scoring there. And the return of Robert Williams just makes it so the team really is nine deep, and you feel comfortable with any of those nine players in the game.
Yeah, and I think the time off will be important for Robert Williams because
he was rusty.
He definitely wasn't the same. That play where he hacked Claxton, like he helped on Kyrie and then tried to recover to Claxton. And normally, not like other humans, like Rob Williams just flies and blocks the shot when he recovers like that. Instead, his timing was off. He didn't recover right. And he smacked Claxton. It was an and one. And Robert Williams, he kind of like shook his head a little bit like, oh man, that normally goes a different way. But he says his knee feels fine, which is great. And he, like this time, should be very valuable for him. It looks like the next series will probably start on Sunday. So he'll have a few practices. He already has the two games to help get his win back. And he's going to be huge against the Bucks because I assume that Al Horford will draw the Giannis assignment most of the time like he has in the past. And having Robert Williams as like the super help defender guy, whether he's guarding Brook Lopez, Wes Matthews, whoever, is just a big, big deal against Giannis in particular. Because you need to be able to guard the paint, you need to be able to protect the basket, and then you need to be able to fly out to stop shooters from shooting. And that's where Robert Williams can be just devastating in that he can do both. So him getting back up to speed and having this time, I think, will be very, very important. And if he's not up to speed, then that's an area where the Bucks will be able to kind of challenge the Celtics a little bit.
Yeah, it's a really good sign, though, that I presume we have to believe him that like he has no pain, but like it's clearly just getting back in the rhythm of things. And I think it's really good for the Celtics that they're going to be able to get a practice in. You mentioned Nick Claxton. I just wanted to ask how electric the kind of the Nick Claxton 0 for 10 was in the building. Was that the playoff basketball you showed up for? That's what you wanted to see?
Yes. Yes, that is exactly what I needed.
We saw hack a Claxton, which I was not necessarily expecting, but
that was just incredible, wasn't it? To go first 10.
Make the 11th. It was wild, and like there, I guess with good reason he didn't close out the game just because it Ime just like flashed it once and like just let them know like we are willing to do this. We are willing to put this guy on the line. But none of the misses really looked like they were on. Like there were some bad misses in that Claxton thing, but just kind of wild that the Nets season, like a lot of it came down to, I guess, relying on players like Claxton or the aging Blake Griffin to kind of come in and take charges. But
I also enjoyed how ruthless Ime was while talking about it afterward.
What did he say? I missed it.
He said, yeah, he's like, that's something we circled in our scouting report and told our guys before the series even happened, was Claxton and Drummond are going to miss free throws. So he's just a ruthless man, and he'll let you know about it when he beats you. He'll let you know who he's picking on. He'll let you know why he's picking on him. Just a ruthless, ruthless coach. And he did a great job in the first series. Like, I thought the defensive game plan to take away Durant and make things as tough as possible on him was executed just about to perfection. And obviously the Celtics have some advantages there. They are the rare team that has like a lot of options on Durant. I'm not saying there's a Durant stopper out there in this entire universe, never mind on the Celtics roster. But they have Grant Williams off the bench. They have Marcus Smart in the starting lineup. They have Jaylen Brown. They have Jason Tatum. They have Al Horford, who can guard just about anyone on switches. They have just so many options to guard Durant. And I thought, you know, shuffling through those guys, having those guys be so physical, and then the job that Tatum did on Durant was just spectacular. Like he was phenomenal. in that matchup and really took that personally, I thought, in the sense that he wanted to prove himself, and he certainly did. That was just a monster series from Jason Tatum, doing it all. Offense, defense, passing, scoring, a buzzer beater, and a wild sequence. He blocked Durant twice. Like, Tatum, he even fouled out for the first time in 3 years. Tatum did everything in that series. And he's kind of arrived as one of the guys in the NBA, it feels like.
It does feel like he's entering kind of that next echelon, that next tier of players who can, like, in this series, he was the best player in the series on both ends of the court. And I think it speaks so very well to the Celtics' chances throughout the rest of the kind of playoffs, because so often we talk about best player in the series will win just because that's kind of how the NBA playoffs work. And I feel like the Celtics have the advantage of Tatum can elevate his game to be that best player, but they have also this amazing depth around him, like you mentioned. So he is not the only guy who has to guard Kevin Durant. He won't be the only guy that's going to have to guard Giannis. And I think that just the Celtics have so many guys. Like the in game four, they actually got in like a pretty decent foul trouble with all of their big men having four fouls, but it really... Like, if Robert Williams wasn't back, I think it would have been much more of an issue. But they were managed to get through it. And I think, like, Grant Williams just being able to hold his own against Kevin Durant is wild. It's just from, like, his development. And he played, over 30 minutes a game this series. He's just kind of the perfect guy to slide in off the bench, who gives you size, who gives you physicality. And then if he's also knocking down threes, he's so valuable for the Celtics team, just because I think the strategy is going to be similar to facing Giannis. Obviously, you're not going to be playing as high up on Giannis trying to take shots away, but you are going to build that wall and you're going to need to be physical. And I think Grant Williams is going to be a major part of that.
Yeah, for sure. And then the other piece of it, like you said, the three-point shooting. The Bucks forced teams to shoot threes. Teams shot more than 40 three-point attempts per game against the Bucks this season. So every three you get from Grant Williams, every three you get from Derek White, every three you get from Marcus Smart is important. And I think that's going to be one of the challenges for the Celtics, is find shots that and have guys knock down shots that aren't necessarily their best shooters, but also, like, know when to take the shots. And they're probably a lot more trustworthy in that way than they were a year ago. You know, like, they are a team that has been hunting the right types of shots for 3 months now, and they just seem to get better and better at that. So, but it's a totally different challenge against Milwaukee, because they've got Giannis inside, they've got Brook Lopez inside. They basically take away all points in the paint, where the Nets, a lot of the time, it was like Claxton was guarding Tatum, and who the hell else was going to protect the paint? Like, Durant was tired as hell because he had to run through a million different bodies. And Bruce Brown is like a good defender, but he's like 6'3". All the rest of those tiny guys the Nets sent out there, the Celtics were able to take advantage of it. It won't be the same against Milwaukee. So I'm excited to see the clash of the Celtics taking on the champs, assuming that is the matchup we get.
It's going to be interesting also with the Chris Middleton injury. The Bucks have responded by kind of playing their bigger lineup, going to Bobby Portis, Giannis, and Brook Lopez in the lineup. I think the interesting thing is, given the Bucks give up and kind of want you to take threes, and the Celtics have done a pretty good job of taking the right threes, you know, giving up a good shot to get a great shot, is like, do they take those the three that the Bucks want you to take? Do they work the ball around, get forks the Bucks in rotation maybe to get a better three? I feel like the decision making on that end is going to be super important. And then just given the size, the Celtics had such a clear advantage on the offensive glass where I just don't know if they're going to have that same advantage. I mean, Rob Williams wasn't great in game four, but still had four offensive rebounds. Just given the size of the Bucks, I don't know if they necessarily have that same advantage. I don't know, like, what the best strategy is. Do you like? What do you? This is very early prediction, but given the Bucks like to play drop defense and like to force threes, what do you think the best closing lineup is to go up against the Bucks? Because I don't know if it's necessarily kind of having the two bigs.
Yeah, we'll see. I think part of that relies on how well Marcus Smart and Al Horford can shoot threes. If those guys are shooting well, and maybe Rob Williams, you know, you put him in there and he's able to beat that Brook Lopez defense by giving that lob threat. But it's really tough to get lobs. It's really tough to score inside against the Bucks, because not only is Brook Lopez back there by the rim, but also Giannis is lurking nearby. And he is able to wipe away a lot of different stuff. I don't know. But also at the other end of the court, like, having a lot of size against Giannis is important. And having Robert Williams and Al Horford both on the court could be important. So we'll see. It's going to be more of a chess match series, I feel like, for Ime Udoka versus the first round. Like, they just had so many advantages, and the Nets had, like, obvious weaknesses that were just easy to pick on. Like, oh, you're going to throw Seth Curry, Goran Dragic, and Kyrie Irving in the same lineup? Okay, like, it's not hard to figure out where to attack there. Whereas the Bucks are much, much different defensively. Since Brook Lopez got back, they're back to defending at a super high level. And even though Chris Middleton is out and his absence will be huge, like, that defense has been super impressive even without him. So how big do you think the Middleton thing will be? It looks like he'll probably miss at least the start of the series if the 2-week timeline that they said initially comes to fruition.
I think it's huge just because it means the Celtics can focus that much more attention to Giannis. And you really don't, like, Jrue Holiday has had some big games and can definitely attack off the dribble, but you just don't necessarily worry as much about Jrue Holiday. Chris Middleton is just as a volume scorer and a guy who can definitely punish you if you're collapsing to the center just to deal with Giannis the entire time. I think it's a huge advantage for the Celtics, and it just chips away against a Bucks team that I don't really believe in their depth to when they had Middleton. And so basically by forcing Bobby Portis to the lineup, like, I think the Celtics, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how much Bud actually plays Giannis. If we're going to see kind of similar KD style minutes and up over like 44 minutes a game. But I think anytime basically the Bucks bench right now is Javon Carter, Grayson Allen, and Pat Connaughton. And it feels like anytime those three guys are on the floor, it's a defensive mismatch for the Celtics, and it's someone they can target. And those guys are going to be playing big minutes just because they have to. Like, you pretty much play an 8-guy rotation in the playoffs. And so I think it's a huge thing just because it really weakens the Bucks' depth. And it feels like the Celtics can really punish the Bucks when those guys are in the game, and then especially punish the Bucks anytime Giannis goes to the bench.
Yeah, Middleton often dominates those minutes when Giannis goes to the bench. And so that's a huge deal for them. And it hasn't mattered against Chicago, but it's totally different. It should be totally different in a series against Boston. Middleton also, like, Grayson Allen's been great, but, like, the Celtics just took away Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, you know? And so they have a lot of different guys. They switch a lot. And especially for the lesser guys in that rotation, like the easier shots you can get, the better. If Grayson Allen needs to try to do too much, that could be a bad thing for them. If Pat Connaughton needs to try to do too much, that could be a bad thing for them. Even if Jrue Holiday has to do too much, he's really good at both ends of the court, but that could be a bad thing for them. And so Middleton is like, and he's the guy they run their late game offense through. Obviously, Giannis is a part of that, but Middleton is the guy like in charge of most of their late game offense, making the decisions. It's a huge, huge deal. And then the other layer of this is the Bucks basically said we would rather avoid the Nets and have a road series against Boston. So I wonder if Ime Udoka brings that up to the Celtics as disrespect. Like, these guys basically said home court doesn't matter against you. And I do think he'll probably bring that one up.
Oh, yeah. A master of motivation, Ime, is absolutely going to bring that up. I think it's interesting you mentioned kind of they run their late offense through Middleton, because I thought the Nets definitely struggled in the clutch in terms of generating offense, but they had clear kind of go-to. It's like, all right, we're going to go to Durant and Kyrie ISOs. I don't know if Giannis ISOs are necessarily like the thing for the Bucks right now that's going to get them clutch offense. And so I initially don't know what the Bucks answer is going to be, where it's like close game in the fourth quarter under 5 minutes, what their go-to set is or who they're trying to attack. And I think it's one of the things that just make the Celtics so talented is they just have a giant closing lineup filled with guys who are all plus defenders. There's no kind of weak spot where it just feels like I wouldn't have guessed that this would be an advantage for them, but just like in the clutch, Giannis, if he's attacking the, like he gets his buckets by attacking the paint, any outside shot that Giannis takes, it feels like a win for the Celtics defense in this regard. And so I'm very curious to see what the Bucks try to do to execute, to try to get better looks, especially down the stretch.
Yeah. And look, they're a championship team. Like, that matters too, I think. They have a lot of belief in what they're trying to do. They have a bunch of guys who have been there before, and in most cases been there before together. So I don't think that can be discounted or overlooked in any way. But yeah, we'll see. I think it will be a really interesting series. I am looking forward to that one. And I think as you look around the Eastern Conference, things are kind of set up for the Celtics, or at least like look like they're set up pretty well for the Celtics. Like, Middleton's hurting. In Miami, Kyle Lowry and Jimmy Butler are both hurting. In Philadelphia, Embiid has a significant thumb injury, and the 76ers seem to be in a little bit of disarray, at least in the first round already, against the Toronto team. That's good, but not great. James Harden doesn't look like himself. So Miami is a bear. Like, that defense has been unbelievable. They've totally dismantled Atlanta from everything they want to do. But like, if the Celtics do get Robert Williams back to full strength and use this layoff to help him get there, like, they are the lone untouched team at this point is what I would say. And this is an opportunity for them. They're coming off a great, great series against Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, where they answered the call at every turn. And they've got Tatum, who seems to be realizing, like, or seems to have realized, not even just realizing, seems to have realized all of what he can do on both ends of the court. And this is, Kyrie thinks it's their time. Do you think it's their time?
Not trying to get ahead of myself, but it definitely feels like
I knew you would think it.
A 4-4-4 situation might be a brewing. I don't know if it's going to be that crazy. I actually would not
that'd be outrageous to pick the Celtics to sweep again. But it does feel like things are aligning, especially with the Middleton injury, especially with them having home court. And it just, and Rob Williams coming back to playing full health, I would imagine, I don't know exactly like how they're going to deal with it, but I wouldn't be shocked to see him starting, maybe not in game one, but definitely by game two, just because I think there's so much better with him there. But if you just think back to that 3 month stretch where they had before his injury, where they were just playing the most dominant basketball I think we've seen in a since what, like the 73 win Warriors, and just absolutely destroying teams on both ends of the court, everything is kind of lining up for them to continue to do that. And I think the fact that they did dominate for 3 months and play just phenomenal basketball, I think, going back to a Brad Stevens-ism, this team has championship habits. Like they just make the right play, especially on defense. They don't, sure, there's an occasional possession here or there where they miss something, but they're playing 48 minutes of defense. They're making the right plays on offense, and they kind of, them playing so well for such a long extended period of time, I think is paying dividends for them now in the playoffs. And they have the makeup right now of a championship team. And so I think that, like, you have to be optimistic moving forward, just seeing everything that they've done here in the first four games against the Nets. Like, every game against the Nets, even when they fell down, I'm thinking especially in game two, you kind of had this feeling of just inevitability with the Celtics are going to at least get themselves back into the game, which is not the feeling you necessarily had in recent years. In recent years, you had the feeling that they might get themselves back in the game but never get over the hump, or if they had a big lead, like up 20, that they were going to lose it. Now it's just kind of a feeling like the Celtics are going to figure out a way to at least give themselves a chance, which I think is just a huge factor. Like, I just can't envision a game in which the Celtics get blown out in the playoffs. That just hasn't happened basically in 2020, and in 2022, and I just can't see them not competing in a game and not having it be close at any point in the playoffs coming up.
We'll see. The more I think about a closing lineup, the more I'm starting to think Horford at the five, Grant Williams at the four might be the way to go. Unless Robert Williams is just at full, I'm ready to fuck shit up 100%. Because,
yeah, I mean, he needs to be like the dangerous lob threat and actually over the top. Because if they're going to play drop coverage and like Brooke Lopez is going to be in that drop, if Robert Williams is an actual lob threat, that just makes the job of Brooke Lopez that much harder. And they can really punish that way. But I agree. I think Al Horford, haven't seen a lot of it, but if they can run that kind of pick and pop, I do think the lineup with Grant and Horford gives you just enough size and physicality and 3-point shooting that it might be your most like versatile 2-way lineup.
Yeah, I think that could be the way to go. And then, I mean, I'm thinking about matchups in my head. It could be like you force Giannis either guard one of those guys who will spend some of their time camped out at the arc, and you force Brooke Lopez to guard one of those guys, or Giannis is in the action and you don't have him lurking as a help defender, and that could open up things elsewhere too. So, and Middleton, his absence isn't just a big deal offensively too. Like that dude is a pretty good defender. And like his absence will be missed on both sides. His size will be missed. So we'll see. We'll see.
Recipe for the Bucks beating the Celtics? Like, what has to go right for the Bucks in order for them to prevail in this series? Because it feels like you're going to need a monster performance from Giannis in pretty much every game, just, I think, for the Bucks to score. I just don't have as much faith in kind of their scoring, especially without Middleton. But I think it is, like, it needs to be huge performances from Giannis in addition to the Celtics just missing, like, taking in, like, 43s a game and only making, like, 12 of them.
Yeah. Sorry, I was just looking at some of the Bucks stats right now. What do you think the Bobby Portis, Giannis, Brook Lopez trio could play at all against the Celtics? Probably not, because that was their starting group in their last game.
That is a recipe for either Bobby Portis or Brook Lopez just getting abused on the perimeter. Like, I just, like, the Bucks wing defense, they like to play Giannis in that kind of help position, kind of like center field in the Robert Williams style. I just don't know who they have on the wing. I know Drew.
But they could use Giannis to guard, like, Marcus Smart or something and just shade off him and force him to make shots or take shots.
I still feel like then you have a Jason Tatum on Wesley Matthews, Bobby Portis. Like, where are you? How are they, like, slowing down Jason Tatum if they're not going to put two on the ball?
Yeah, that lineup is huge. That lineup is so big, like, just enormous. And Giannis's versatility kind of lets them get away with it. But that, it's interesting just how big they've gone with Chris Middleton out. Like, it's kind of eye-opening to be like, oh, my God, Portis, Giannis, Lopez, all at once, motherfucker?
I think it's interesting, like, what are you really that's like, – I think Portis and Brook Lopez are good fives in terms of they can shoot the basketball well and, like, make enough threes. But it's like, is that really the enough spacing that you want with Giannis on the court? You will kind of want to give him driving lanes, and I feel like the Celtics, despite those guys being pretty decent, I feel like they're – Bobby Portis is much more of like a pick and pop three guy. Same with Brook Lopez. I just don't know the exact way the Bucks are going to try and attack the Celtics. And I know people much smarter than me can figure it out, but it's just right now I'm trying to not be overly optimistic. I'm trying to talk myself into the Celtics, not just being the huge favorites in the series. But it seems like things are definitely, like, in that direction.
You're pretty excited. You're pretty optimistic.
I would say I'm peed and jade, pumped and jacked about this upcoming series. Kind of wish it would start earlier. In fact, a lot of the days off are going to be helpful. It also means probably Chris Middleton, if he can come back, comes back a little bit earlier in the series than initially anticipated. But I think the rest will probably help. But having a full 6 days in between series is kind of wild.
It is a long time. I do think it could be good for the Celtics, though, especially for Robert Williams. But, like, this is the second six or so day rest that they've had in the last couple weeks, the last few weeks. And so it's good for Al Horford. It's good for Jason Tatum, who plays a ton of minutes. When you can wrap up a playoff series early, that can have major benefits later on in the series. I think you've heard Tatum talk about the length of the Toronto series when they were in the bubble and how they could have closed them out early and it came back to haunt them, because instead that series went seven. And even though the Celtics won, it was like the attrition from it was impactful and carried over into the next round against Miami. So making quick work of Kevin Durant, making quick work of Kyrie Irving, like, that could be very helpful down the line.
All right, we'll have a further Bucks-Celtics preview some point later in the week. Maybe we'll get Eric Name from The Athletic, who covers the Bucks for them. Let's close it out. What were some of your favorite moments, the moments you'll remember most from Bucks-Nets? I'm going to just start off with, I thought Grant Williams guarding KD after the whistle in Game 4 and making sure he didn't get a clean shot off was just that was good breakfast. That was fantastic stuff.
You didn't prepare me for this part of the show. Didn't tell me I should come with some things to discuss, but Tatum blocking Durant's shot twice and almost a third time was just eye-opening. Nobody does that. Nobody on earth touches Kevin Durant's shot. And Tatum did it multiple times. So, you know, on top of all the other stuff Tatum did, that's the type of thing that makes you go, oh, wow. Okay. Tatum's doing that now. Okay.
The obvious answer was the Tatum game one buzzer beater would probably be the most memorable moment for the series. But I'll give you another one from game four. Marcus Smart completely airballing a shot and then ripping off his shooting sleeve because it didn't have no buckets in him, and then he nailing his next three. I thought that was a huge moment in game four.
Yeah, that was – I mean, sometimes the shooting sleeve has no buckets. Isaiah taught his former teammates a lesson. When something has no buckets in it, you move on. You find something that could give you some buckets. I'm going to go – with the time Tice and Durant made contact and Tice lived to tell the tale. Tice, the war on Tice was paused for one moment.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 U.S.-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day, or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service anytime. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service that you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
You there?
I left, I came back, so I didn't hear the moment whatsoever where I'm going to say, yes, I agree.
No, I said the time that Tice and Durant tangled and Tice lived to tell the tale, the foul did not go on him. The war on Tice was halted for but a moment in time.
And what a beautiful, beautiful moment it was. All right, let's finish off this podcast, going to the phones. Joshua B, you're going to thrash me for my lack of exuberance, and I'm ready for it. Come on down. You're the next contestant on the
All right. How you guys doing? How are you doing? Joshua, it's so good to see you. I'll tell you, I was waiting all day after game four for a podcast. I had come to expect you guys to go right away, and instead I got to listen to people talk about the Montreal Canadiens and French. I got a wonderful podcast about the Atlanta Braves, but you're here now, and I'm so excited to be a part of this. Just like I'm so excited that the Bucks were swept by the Celtics, but not the Bucks. That I'm predicting the Bucks are going to go down in five, right?
And ooh, five.
Yeah, five. Because we have a massive, massive matchup problem. The moment Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum is switched on to Wesley Matthews, we're going to dunk on him. The moment you decide to play Grayson Allen against Jaylen Brown or Jason Tatum, that's a matchup problem. And never mind that I think that Brooke Lopez is actually worse than Robert Williams III, right? Forget all of that. I actually think that you have severe matchup problems when you're looking at the Bucks without Chris Middleton. And the other thing that everybody seems to be forgetting is that last year, the reason that the Bucks were as successful as they were was because Chris Middleton continued to make clutch shot after clutch shot after clutch shot. And finally, at the end of all of that, right, you still have the problem of the Bucks sacrificing home court advantage to play the Bulls and not polishing off the sweep. Meanwhile, the Celtics get the extra rest. How healthy do you think that Robert Williams III is going to be for this series? I mean, I think we're pushing at our six-week time frame if they start on Sunday. Or am I wrong on that? I could be wrong on that. But I think that we're in the zone. Are we?
I think it would be about 5 weeks out. Until game one, which will likely be on Sunday. So, yeah, and Middleton, to your point, his status, not just his availability, but how he looks is as big a question mark as can be, and as important a thing as could be in this series. If he's not right, it's going to be tough for them to manufacture the type of looks that you need to get against this Celtics defense. And I mean, if he does miss game one, game two, and he's not right when he comes back, that's a significant deal for them, given that he'll have to have those major offensive responsibilities and then guard a Tatum or Brown on top of that.
I'm predicting the Celtics to go up to finish in five. And the reason I'm doing that is because I believe that the NBA is going to send Scott Foster down to referee our game if we start to win that third game, right? Or they may send Scott Foster down in game three just to make sure that they extend the series. Are you worried at all about the officiating assignment trying to extend this series from the NBA side? Or do you think that I'm just imagining that this is not going to be a big deal? You know, that
I think Milwaukee's if you're into conspiracies, Milwaukee's a little different than Brooklyn as far as the conspiracy goes. You know, Brooklyn had Kevin Durant and Kyrie Irving, and so I'm
motivation to get the New York market in the game, less so to try to get the Milwaukee market in the game. I'm always scared of Scott Foster and or Tony Brothers just because of their body of work. But as we saw in game four, I think the Celtics can still overcome it. The officiating being completely rigged, I just hasn't been a huge storyline. I can't think except since like maybe the 2006 finals with Dwayne Wade. Like that was the last time. It was like a highly questionable series. But I'm just not as concerned about that. I feel like the best team will win out despite any possible shenanigans from Scott Foster.
That's potentially true.
John O. Johnny O, how's it going? Welcome to Anything's Pod.
Good. Yeah, thank you. I'm also on the relation of like fouling. Do you think it's going to be in the Bucks' game plan to try to irritate Jason Tatum as much as possible? Because it seems like Tatum has these spurts of anger throughout the games, and then that causes him to have dumb fouls, like charging into Blake Griffin in game four, trying to get something aggressive. So do you think a game plan from the Bucks is just try to have to get Tatum more irritable? Because I think they have the personnel to irritate Jason Tatum more than the Brooklyn Nets, per se.
Yeah, I see what you're saying, where Tatum gets mad, he starts focusing on the refs a little bit, he throws up the hands and gets all pissed off. I get it, but I think he's pretty much handled himself well for the most part over the last 3 months at least. And that said, yes, they are going to try to irritate him. They are going to probably send Drew Holiday at him. They are going to have Brook Lopez at the rim. They are going to have Giannis as a help defender. They are going to do whatever they can to limit his easy buckets, to force him to take tougher ones. They have a ton more size than Brooklyn, so he won't just be like running by tiny people as he goes to the rim with little rim protection waiting for him there. It's going to be tougher. The Bucks defense is much better, so I think they'll definitely, like, everyone's going to want to take out the other team's best player and do what you can to make things difficult for him. But I don't think it's necessarily like piss him off or get the refs to piss him off or whatever. I think it's just, let's do whatever we can to make things tough on him. And that means Drew Holiday, and that means a whole lot of dudes waiting for Tatum at the rim every time he goes there.
Yeah, I mean, the Bucks are clearly just a better defensive team, and they have Giannis, who's a defensive player of the year type player. So I think it's going to be a lot harder for the Celtics to get easy baskets. But I think fouls are going to be very interesting on the other end, because I think the Celtics are going to be extremely physical with Giannis. And unlike KD, Giannis is relentless and is going to keep coming. And it's going to be very interesting how that whistle kind of dictates.
Marcus Smart is going to try to take so many charges.
Marcus Smart's going to try to average 2 charges per game, and he might be able to get, like, that really will swing some games if he's able to get Giannis in foul trouble. I also think the Celtics, with the luxury of Daniel Tice, they have like 4 big men who can get in foul trouble, and having that depth at the big position, it's like, I think it's going to be advantageous for them, because you know what? Like, Daniel Tice can foul out of every game, and that can be, like, I don't think they're going to necessarily go to that. Like, I would expect him to have much less minutes as Rob takes a larger role. But if Rob or Al Horford gets in foul trouble, they can go to Tice and still kind of have an effective defense. And so I think there's the fouls and how Giannis is officiated will likely have kind of an impact on the series.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. And Marcus Smart has had a number of times in the past where he's taken like multiple charges against Giannis. So he will be rotating and he will be there. And Horford, like, the Celtics just have a lot of size. They're similar teams defensively with just a lot of size, a lot of tough dudes. And I don't think the Bucks have quite the defensive personnel that Boston does, but they're huge. And especially with Giannis and Brooke Lopez, and when they play Portis alongside those guys, and Drew Holiday, a point guard, like, they're just big. it's going to be a lot tougher to find space than it was during the first round.
All right, let's go to Jonathan R. joining us here in the Athletic Live Room. Jonathan, how you doing?
I'm doing great, fellas. Quick question. How many times can Jason Tatum finally emerge as a superstar? Every single national media talking head has said it at different points over the last couple years. At what point does that narrative get laid to rest where he is actually considered by everybody what we've known for a while now, that he is that dude?
Well, here's a thing with that, I think, is he's had like a number of leaps throughout his career. So first it was the year they went to the conference finals in the bubble, when it was January, whatever it was that year, he just took off. Then last year, kind of sort of stayed at that level. He had the 1 month after COVID where he wasn't great. And then kind of had the huge playoff series against Kevin Durant. Where he changed really to me this year, and where he took the leap, another leap, is the playmaking. Like, not just the court vision, but the willingness to kick out the ball at the right moment to the right player and just pick people apart with his passing. And he's gotten so much better at that. And it just changed everything for not just him, but for the Celtics. And then the first round series against Brooklyn showed off his defense too. And he's always been a good defender. But I thought just the level he played at consistently in that series was just pretty eye-opening. And to do it against Durant, a guy that nobody makes uncomfortable, is he's proving himself now, Tatum is, as one of the best two-way players in the entire game. And I don't think you could always say that about him. Even when he was taking the leap before, like, you couldn't always trust him to make the right reads at the right time and to get the Celtics what they wanted. And I think that's where he's taken the biggest jump this year. And that's one of the reasons their offensive execution has been so much better over the last few months, is that he's both capable and willing to do that now.
And I think it could happen 3 more times where the national media says he's a superstar. It's just like, if the Celtics continue winning series, the narrative, this is just how the media works. He's going to be Jason Tatum has arrived. Now he has taken down Giannis. Jason Tatum has now gotten his team to the NBA Finals. Jason the media works is like when you have a win like that, a series win, especially against the team that has established stars or is an established team, or like you just got to anoint someone, and then you know what, you say that they drive the bus, and then we have a whole discussion on who's a bus driver and who's a bus passenger.
Just driving the bus.
Is driving the bus potable?
Absolutely. The last few days have shown that driving the bus is a pretty big topic in the NBA.
It's also important to public infrastructure. Fuck.
That was a bad execution of that joke.
I realized I got sticky real quick. Anything's potable, guys. You guys know what the deal is now. Join us later in the week. We'll hopefully have a guest and further break down this Bucks Celtics series. Thank you guys for listening. Thank you to everyone who joined us here in the Athletic Live Room. And we'll be back later in the week to preview Celtics Bucks. Anything is potable. Anything is potable. Anything is potable.
As you've probably heard by now, we've teamed up with BetMGM this season. We'll be using BetMGM lines to make all of our picks, and we'll have special offers for our listeners each week. If you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC, and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager with BetMGM. Here's how it works. Download the BetMGM app and sign up using bonus code THEATHLETIC. Make your first deposit of at least $10, place your first bet on any game, and claim your voucher for a one-year subscription to The Athletic. See BetMGM.com for terms. U.S. promotional offers not available in D.C., Mississippi, New York, Nevada, Ontario, or Puerto Rico. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. Call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369 in New York. Call 1-800-NEXT-STEP in Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 in Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF in Iowa. 1-800-270-7117 for confidential help in Michigan. 1-800-981-0023 in Puerto Rico. First bet offer for new customers only in partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel. Don't forget, if you haven't signed up for BetMGM yet, use bonus code THEATHLETIC and you'll get a one-year subscription to The Athletic, plus up to a $1,500 first bet offer on your first wager.